On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh, myself, and special guest Matthew Drexler break down a bracket of the best net of the 2010s. It's part one. We're starting things off in the first round. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, and welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Marcus Barahal, joining me as he does every time we can. Josh Bass is on the other line, and then also we've got a lifelong Nets fan, my former coworker at the NBA. Now he is with ESPN. We went to a Nets game together fairly recently, Matthew Drexler. Is also here. Drex, how's it going?
Good. That Nets Suns game was was thrilling. I think it was like a 40-point game.
Yeah, it was revenge because Josh, you and I went to Nets Suns Halloween 2017 and the Suns won. So this was good retribution for the Nets, right, Josh?
It was great. Anytime the Nets win, it's much appreciated. There was surprisingly a lot of Suns fans there.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Two of them were with us, my girlfriend Sarah and Gavin. But regardless, there has not been real basketball in a while, so we are taking it to the sort of out-of-the-box ideas. It's bracket week on the Locked On Podcast Network, and this podcast is no exception. We're going to be bringing you the best net of the 2010s bracket. We've got 32 of your favorite Nets from the past decade to choose from. To do the seeding, we just sorted it by most points scored during the decade for the Nets. So that means guys like Kevin Durant, who did not play in the decade, he's not eligible. Kyrie did not make the cut either since he only played in 20 games. But yeah, we've got a lot of good guys to get into, some tough matchups. Maybe we'll have some upsets. Josh, first off, are you excited for this?
I am. I think this is one of my favorite ideas that we've had in a while. You know, I mean, this podcast is known for just how creative we are with our content. And I think we've really managed to top ourselves this time. And Drex, I'm sure, same with you, a lot of fond memories and also not so fond memories when we got to see the list of ghosts from Nets past.
Yeah, a lot of 20-win teams, some guys that – were crucial parts of going through that, and now obviously where the Nets are now and where they came from back when during the Darren Williams era is just honestly what a lot of the thick of the decade was, like 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017. All those were kind of transition years, so it's kind of interesting to see some of the guys that are on this list.
Yeah, it makes me curious of like who, if we happen to the three of us get together in 10 years from now and do the best Nets of the 2020s, like who will be on that list? Who, like from the current roster, I'm assuming KD and Kyrie, if those guys can stay even like slightly healthy, they'll be near the top. Just, but yeah, so much time has passed, like seeing some of the names on this list, guys who I forgot even were ever on the Nets, guys who are here for like one season or not even that in some cases. So a lot to get into. Don't want to dilly-dally too much.
When we go through the 32 people and when we get to the person, can you just identify who you were like most shocked was on this list? Because I'm curious from your kind of outsider perspective who that will be. So just when we get to that point, just let us know.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. We'll get to the matchups then. Like as a guy pops up, I'll say, I'll do one of those. We'll start off with the 1 versus 32. We've got 1 seed Brook Lopez taking on the 32 seed Kevin Garnett. KG, undeniably the better player, but this is, of course, best net of the decade. That's why Brook is the number 1 seed. A couple quick stats on Brook in the decade for the Nets. 7 years with New Jersey / Brooklyn in the 2010s. 7,834 points, over 3,000 more than anyone else on this list. So definitely a favorite in this bracket, made an all-star team. Drex, I'll start with you. This one should be pretty easy. Brook, KG, who you got?
Yeah, this one didn't really take long for me, I'm sure for everybody else, but all-time franchise leading scorer. I mean, undeniably, like you said, Kevin Garnett is a better player. But as a net, it's Brook Lopez, no contest.
Yeah, Josh, any hesitation, or is this pretty straightforward?
Nah, full agreement there. I think KG, literally the second he got to the net, somehow his offensive game was instantly washed, and he basically just stood out 18 feet and shot jumpers the entire time. And Brook, the one thing you can say about him, extremely consistent offensive player and one of the best to ever wear a Nets uniform. So he easily advances. There will be no UMBC UVA story here.
Yeah, and KG barely snuck into this bracket. He was 1 point ahead of 33 Sasha Vujacic. So he almost had Sasha in the bracket. Could have been good.
Sasha took a run for his money.
I know, yeah. Would have been a lot closer, maybe. So let's move on. That one pretty easy. Let's go to arguably the toughest, just based on seeding. Let's do the 16 versus 17 now to see who Brook will be playing in the next round. We've got Alan Crabb, the 16 seed, taking on Jarrett Jack, the 17. Kind of an interesting matchup here. Josh, I'll let you get started with this one because I know you're very passionate about Alan Crabb.
Yes, hate the guy. Nets with pretty big expectations. I mean, when they traded for him, people thought he could be someone that could up his scoring average to 16 or 18 and kind of maintain a similar level of efficiency, maybe playing the role of a guy like Bojan Bogdanović, who they had lost in a trade the season before to the Wizards, but he just completely flopped. I mean, his three-point shot really wasn't the same, even though it's still good. He couldn't do anything off the dribble, and then they unceremoniously tossed him over to Atlanta this offseason. And comparing that to a guy in Jarrett Jack, who a lot of folks lamented, especially that year before kind of everything changed with Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks getting put into place. But Jarrett Jack was someone that was able to at least get the Nets reliable offense. I mean, he was on these terrible 20-win teams, but it wasn't really his fault that he was kind of thrust into the leading man role. He did get injured that second season, kind of ended things for him, gave the younger guys a chance. But, you know, this is really, I think, a battle between who's going to lose to Brolo in the next round. But I have to give it to Jarrett Jack just because he overall slightly exceeded expectations as a Net.
Yeah, Drex, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with Jarrett Jack as well. I think Alan Crabb was, obviously, he had injuries, but he didn't live up to that contract, that's for sure. I mean, he got paid, and now he's barely even in the NBA anymore. But he shot 41% from the field his first years from three, I should say, not from the field. So he had his moments, his spurts, but again, Jarrett Jack, I just feel like at one point when he took over the starting role from Deron Williams when he was kind of in his last legs there with the Nets. And really Jarrett Jack honestly was probably the leader of that Nets team his final season with Brooklyn. So I got to give it to Jarrett Jack over Alan Crabb.
Yeah, I think this one, I'm with you guys. It's kind of interesting because Crabb, I feel like, has a higher ceiling if he's like hitting his shots, but it was just so inconsistent when he was with the Nets, whereas Jack was kind of like both of you guys mentioned, kind of a rock for the team in not a great period, but even still, like he did play in the playoffs once with the Nets in 2015, and he played pretty well in that series. He was like 12-4-4 in that series, so not he contributed, you know. Alan Crabb didn't play in the Philly series, so I'm with you guys, Jarrett Jack. Moving on to round two, for our next matchup, let's head to 8 versus 25. This one may be a little sentimental. We have 8 seed Bojan Bogdanović taking on former guest on this podcast, number 25, Trevor Booker. Booker was on this podcast about a year ago, right, Josh?
Yep, about a year ago.
Yeah, good to talk to him about cereal and basketball. That was nice. but Josh, is that enough to get him the win for you here?
Yeah, I mean, listen, for me, I kind of think it is, and I love Booker.
Ooh.
Like, Bojan, I kind of associate him more with a lot of seasons for the Nets where, like, underperformance, lost potential. You know, he was a guy that really blossomed after leaving the Nets, and he clearly had the offensive talent, but he didn't have kind of the proper folks in place that would really empower him. Maybe that was a Lionel Hollins problem. because he just doesn't know how to empower anyone and get the most out of his players. But Booker, I mean, besides being a guest on this podcast, which automatically gives him points, it wasn't good, but he was a very fun player to watch. I mean, his like insistence on getting the rebound and pushing the ball in transition and not passing to anyone, trying to like do a mini LeBron while almost always resulting in a charge, was infuriating. But I do look upon it finally enough to give him the upset.
Drexler, do you agree?
I'm definitely going with Bojan Bogdanović. And Bojan, like you said, it's always Trevor Booker, but they're associated with kind of losing teams, I guess, so to speak. But that's not really something that I'm more concerned about in this particular case, because Bojan had 3 years with Brooklyn where he was kind of one of their only sources of offense. He played in probably about 200 games, I would say, for the Nets. Trevor Booker, he played somewhere around like 18, not even 100. So Bojan had twice the amount of tenure there with Brooklyn as Trevor Booker did. And Bojan was kind of, again, a guy who provided offensive stability. His last year with Brooklyn, he averaged 14 points per game, something Trevor Booker, you know, he's averaged 10 is his career high. That was obviously with Brooklyn, but I definitely think Bojan, the stability, he was one of the best players on those teams while Booker was more of a role player. So I'm giving it to Bojan.
Yeah. I remember like the Bojan Thad Young, like front court pretty fondly, I feel like. I think it's probably partially because, like you mentioned, Josh, Bogdanović got a lot better and more consistent like once he left the Nets. So maybe that is like improving how I'm looking back on him from that era. But I feel like, yeah, he played in the playoffs once. He's sixth on the Nets in threes made in the decade. So he contributed. And I feel like Booker, 10 points, 8 rebounds a game in his time with the Nets. He was solid, but I feel like it was kind of like a lot of empty stats and like kind of anyone who was filling that role could have done that to a certain degree. So I'm going to avoid the upset and break the tie, giving it to Bogdanović. So he will move on where he will face the winner of the 9 versus 24. This one we might have an upset here. We have 9 seed Rondae Hollis-Jefferson taking on 24 Paul Pierce. Pierce, like KG, a brief tenure with the Nets, but I think Pierce provided at least some positives that KG didn't on the court, particularly in that Raptor series. Drexler, I know you're similar to Josh about Alan Crabb. You're passionate about the Raptors in that same way. So start us off here.
Yeah, that shot again, or the block shot against Kyle Lowry, is one of my peak Net fandom moments, and it was provided by Paul Pierce, ironically enough. That taking that into heavy consideration, I still have to give the edge to the hyphen RHJ just because of kind of what he meant, the symbol that he was. I think off the top of my head, he had like 5 years with the Nets, and was kind of that grit, grind, hustle, that era. We played for Lionel Hollins and now then with Kenny Atkinson. So he had kind of been through the ringer with the Nets. We had grown and developed him. He never came out to be the player that we hoped he thought he could be, but he was still solid defensively and just kind of the heart he gave to the Nets organization. I have to give the edge to RHJ over Pierce.
Josh?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one for me. I think like same points that Drex just said, I think I'm just going with a different interpretation. I think Pierce's defensive stop in that game 7 against the Raptors gives him an edge for me. And it's tough because I loved RHJ. And when he broke his ankle that first season, I was heartbroken because he was someone that was just thrilling to watch on defense. And you don't get to see that much. And if you talk about, hey, like he did have improvements his offensive game with his mid-range jumper and his wild drives where it looked like he was just stumbling out of a bar, drunk out of his mind, but somehow would draw an and-one. Like I would be thinking that RHJ would get the nod, but once he came back, his athleticism and defense had slipped so much where he was a really great athlete coming out of Arizona. And then after that ankle injury, like was completely sapped out of his athleticism and had to become more of a ground bound player, which was unfortunate because he showed a lot of flashes, but it's disappointing. But I think I'd love to give the nod to the sentimental hero RHJ, but have to give it to Pierce as my brain wins out on this one.
Yeah, I think I'm with you here, Josh. Rondae, obviously, like 4 seasons with the Nets, Like you mentioned, Drexler, he kind of bridged the gap between that like mid-2010s Nets and then like the Nets now, because Rondé was the guy last season who he like sparked that Kings comeback and hit the game winner. He, in the Philly series when Ed Davis got hurt, Kenny Atkinson kind of had to turn to him as a small ball five, and it was like decently effective. He was 13 points a game in games 2 through 5 in that series. Rondé, 4th in rebounds, 10th in assists, 2nd in steals, 4th in blocks for the Nets in the decade. A lot of consistency, but to me, like, that moment that Pierce had blocking Kyle Lowry is one that, like, is kind of iconic and, like, has become part of Paul Pierce's, like, legend of his late career. Like, he had that. He had his moments with the Wizards where it was, like, kind of the old guy who, like, refused to die and was, like, still, like, teaching all these young guys coming up, like, I'm still here, like, I'll still be around. The Celtics might have traded me, but I still have some value in this league. And I thought that, like, that really fueled, like, a mini rivalry between the Nets and the Raptors for a couple years. Musai Ujiri, his famous line about Brooklyn. I just think that the impact that Pierce had, even though it was only one season, it was pretty efficient. He was 37% from three that season, 13.5 points per game. I'm going to go with Pierce here in our first major upset of the bracket.
I'm shocked both you guys picked Pierce over RHJ.
I think partially RHJ's like ending too was like kind of it kind of leaves like a bad taste in your mouth. I feel like he like fell out of Kenny's rotation and that kind of thing. I don't know, Josh. Do you feel broken up at all about kicking RHJ out this early?
A little broken up. I think if matchups had broken, I think Pierce is a strong 24 seed. You know.
Yeah.
RJ might be a weak 9 seed, some might say. It does balance out, but I don't know. I do feel bad, but because he was like the only beacon of hope we had for a couple years. But I think he was just kind of around long enough where the shine was lost on him, and he definitely lost some of his luster that he had earlier in his career.
Yeah. All right. This next one, Josh, this is for the first time one of those guys I mentioned who I did not remember being on the Nets. Not 4-seed Spencer Dinwiddie, but the guy he is playing, which is 29, Travis Outlaw. I really was like not expecting to see him on this list. And that I guess once we expand to 32, this is going to happen. Travis Outlaw, 82 games with the Nets. In that one season, he was 9 points, 4 rebounds a game. They didn't make the playoffs. Meanwhile, on the other side, Spencer Dinwiddie, arguably my favorite Net of the last 2 years. Josh, I think you're in that same boat. Drexler, this one I would think is pretty easy, but what do you think?
Travis Outlaw doesn't deserve to be defended. So for me, and especially going up against Spencer, I don't even think I need an explanation. I'm picking Spence.
Yeah. Josh?
I fucking hated Travis. I remember this. I have this vivid fucking memory. So I was at sleepaway camp, and obviously it was the summer of the LeBron, Wade, Bosch free agency, and there was so much conjecture around who was going to go where. Maybe the Nets had a chance at some of these big guys, which looking back at it, on it was foolish. And I was there as as LeBron and Bosch joined Wade in Miami, and was seeing all my friends who like he'd celebrate, and Knicks were like, okay, we got Stoudemire, it's fine. And then across the Chiron, as we're watching the decision, the Nets fucking signed Travis Outlaw for like, it was like a 3-year, $25 million contract, which was very rich then. And it was like him and Jordan Farmar. I was like, oh my God, I can't get excited about this. And he was horrible for the Nets. literally could not shoot at all. Just terrible. I would rather have Bo Outlaw. I don't know if they're related, but Outlaw was terrible on the Nets daily blogs. They would call him Outlaw because he was so bad. And obviously, I'm going to go with Dinwiddie here. I think Outlaw would have been my number 32 player out of all the ones we're ranking.
Damn. Would you have put him behind Saša Vujačić?
I would have.
Wow. The ultimate scorn from Josh, putting someone behind. this next one, Josh, I'm going to start with you because it's two of your sentimental favorites, as far as I know. I know one of them, definitely sentimental favorite. The other one, I think so, just based on the nickname you used to call him. We have Andre Blatch taking on Mirza Teletovic for the right to play Spencer Dinwiddie in round 2. Josh, what are you thinking here?
Yeah, Drex, I don't know about you, but I think this is probably my, like, the toughest first round matchup for me because I love both of these guys so much. I think so. Blatch came to the Nets with no expectations. He was kind of a laughing stock in the league. He had basically gotten just like destroyed in Washington. They all hated him there. Came to the Nets and people thought it was going to be a disaster, but it actually worked out really well. He was an overpowering offensive center. They basically told him to get his ass inside and stop taking a ton of threes and trying to be basically a guy handling the ball from the outside. And he was someone who could be a beast on the inside. Him and Reggie Evans would come in and basically just bully people. He was a great scorer for two seasons with the Nets. Very impressive player. He had a great – I remember there was a game where the Nets were playing the Clippers on national TV, and he was basically ISOing on DeAndre Jordan and hit like three step-back jumpers in a row on him. Do you remember that, Drex?
Yeah, I Blatch had that run where he was kind of just – honestly the guy you go to on offense, and I remember that sequence as well specifically.
Yeah, he was awesome. I can't believe that he did not play again in the NBA after that. One, I can't believe they didn't bring him back, and two, I can't believe another team didn't pounce on him. He had to start playing for the Philippines nationally, because looking at his stats, he was great, and the eye test matched it also. I had to agree with you, I was shocked.
I have to think that honestly some word on the street about him, something like that, because his basketball ability on the court, he was a bucket during his time with the Nets.
Yeah, he was really good. 5 win shares, second last season, 3.7 his last. Going up against Teletovic, who I love, he was a big signing when they got him from Europe. Didn't have a good first season, had a really great second season, was hitting 39% of his threes, would shoot it from anywhere. Known for getting in that big fight with LeBron James and in the Heat, and he stood up for the Nets. The Teletubby was a great player. Unfortunately, that third season with the Nets kind of derailed everything. And then after that, he had a good season with Phoenix, but his heart problems got in the way. So Teletovic has a lot of potential, but Blatch, with his consistency and upside, I just have to go with him.
And speaking about Teletovic and his potential, I felt like definitely not to the same extent as Allen Crabbe or Travis Outlaw, but when MT3 came to the Nets, we signed him, it was almost like, oh, this guy is going to be – he's going to be amazing. Can't wait to watch him. And he, don't get me wrong, he was a good player, but I also think he was maybe a little bit overhyped, and I don't want that to factor into my decision, but I definitely just think what it comes down to is Blatch had a certain run. I think it was maybe for 6-7 weeks where – you just knew, all right, let's make sure Andre gets 15 shots. He needs his touches. He's our go-to guy on offense, and he was on fire during that stretch. So I think Blatch definitely is my pick here over Teletovic, but Mirza was a good net, so to speak, as well.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm going with Blatch as well. Just so consistent, like you mentioned, 11-5 in just like 20 minutes a game. For two seasons, played about the same as that in the playoffs. A 15-10 in one game against the Heat in the 2014 series in round two. And Mirza, I agree. Like he's one of those guys in my head who's like more of like a theoretical shooter, where it didn't quite match up. He was 36% from three with the Nets, which is like basically league average. But he was kind of like billed, I think, because he's like bigger and like a guy from Europe. Like he's thought of as like a better shooter than he was. I'm going with Blatch as well here. So he will move on.
So that wraps up this edition of Locked On Nets. We'll be back with part two tomorrow. And if you're looking for more content, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Hollinger and Duncan. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.